Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host, and I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer with granulomatosis synovitis if I learned that you missed today's show. Online testing. What do you test online and how do you get started? The experts take on my hypothetical of a $500,000 fundraising campaign. They are Cam Robbins from Easter Seals and Matt Bergdorf with Donor Digital. That was recorded at NTC 2014, the Nonprofit Technology Conference. And In-Kind Gifts, Maria Semple, our Prospect Research Contributor and the Prospect Finder, returns to talk about in-kind giving. How do you find these non-cash gifts, their value, and the right appraiser? When do you need an appraiser? We'll answer it all. On Tony's Take Two, video from last week's show on ALS's Ice Bucket Challenge. We're sponsored by Generosity Series, hosting multi-charity 5K runs and walks. Here is my interview from NTC 2014 about online testing. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference 2014. We're at the Marriott Wardman Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. With me are Matt Bergdorf and Cam Robbins. Their workshop topic is online testing, practical insights and lessons learned. Matt Bergdorf is senior account executive for Donor Digital, and Cam Robbins is interactive marketing manager for Easter Seals. Matt, Cam, welcome.
Thank you.
Pleasure. We're talking about online testing. What is it specifically, Cam, that we're testing?
That's an excellent question. You have to figure out what your goal is, what do you consider success, and then you test different ways, different paths to get there.
Okay, so the measure of success clearly comes from what it is you want to be successful at.
Right.
And where we find that from our mission? Is it going that organic?
It could be your mission. It could be getting your brand out there. It could be getting your constituents engaged with you. It could be getting more donors to donate.
And it could just be a discrete campaign. Might be just an online campaign that's going to last 60 days or so, or something like that.
Well, you'd want to be a little bit more specific than just a campaign. What is the goal of the campaign? Is it a fundraising campaign and you want to reach X amount? Is it an engagement campaign? You want to raise your engaged constituency by a certain percentage? And so it's showing different ways to increase what it is you're trying to do. So does path A give you... Does path A do it better than path B?
Okay.
Sometimes you find that it's the same. And it's always good just to see what's out there, what other people are doing, because sometimes some people are doing it great. Sometimes that works for you. Sometimes it doesn't. So there's the tried and true that you've always done doesn't always work. And so testing helps you find out if you're in a rut or if you're going down the right path.
I guess, Matt, good testing leads to clearer decisions, better informed decisions about how to get to where you want to go, the way Cam is describing.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things, when you do a good test, one of the main objective is to really try to get a learning, to really try to figure out what you should be doing next. How can you make sure that all of the efforts that you're putting forth, you know, all of these campaigns, all of this creative that you're doing, making sure that it's actually working the best that it possibly can. When you're investing so much time, when you're sometimes investing so much resources, finances, you want to make sure that you're putting those into what's going to give you the best bang for your buck, what's really going to be delivering the best results for you. And exactly as Cam said, sometimes what those results mean or what those results are can vary a little bit depending on your specific goals, your specific campaign objectives, but really you want to, that's the whole point of testing, is really to make sure that you're getting the best results you possibly can. One of the things that I like to always kind of remember, this is actually a quote from one of the individuals that I like to follow, but
Who is that? Why don't you shout out him or her?
It's actually Dr. Flint McLaughlin from Mech Labs. You might know it better as Marketing Sherpa. Their Mech Labs is actually the parent company.
Okay.
I would highly recommend that anybody just kind of follow. They have various free webinars, all sorts of good fun stuff, white papers. It's a large repository of specific tests, actually, that have been done that is very, very insightful, and I would say definitely check it out.
Is there a Twitter ID that people can follow?
I'm sure there is, but I don't know it off the top of my head.
Okay, well, Mech Labs, we can find them. Okay.
Yeah. But basically, one of the things that always sticks with me and that I always try to remember is adequacy is the enemy of excellence. Make sure that you don't really just kind of focus on what is working, you know, because a lot of different nonprofits, a lot of different organizations will have a current plan, a current objective, you know, something that's already built, that's kind of working for them, that's at least keeping them going, that's they feel comfortable with. But the real question is, is that really what could be your best? You know, okay, great, you've got $1 million or $100,000 coming in every month, every year. Well, could you maybe have $3 million coming in if you actually made sure that your creative, your message was the best that it could be? And that's really what testing is aimed at doing, is making sure that you can get to that highest level, that you can make whatever you have work the best that it possibly can.
Okay. I think to help our conversation, Let's create a develop a hypothetical campaign. Can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, fundraising is so basic to nonprofits. I mean, as tempted as I am to make it more sort of community engagement related, but to keep it real for listeners, let's make it a fundraising campaign. And let's say that we don't have a time frame for it, but we're trying to raise $500,000. All right, and we've developed some online landing pages, methods for doing that, and driving people to our online giving page. I'm keeping this pretty basic,
because
I'm not. You're welcome to enhance the hypothetical. That's the whole purpose. You're going to build from this lame structure that I'm creating. Okay, so I want to raise $500,000, and I don't have a time frame for doing it, and. We're typically our annual budget is $2.5 million. We're a $2.5 million agency, okay? But I want to raise $500,000 in a campaign, and I'm not really, as I said, concerned about the duration of the campaign. And we've developed landing pages. Now, have I built enough of an infrastructure for a test yet, or not yet?
No, absolutely. Every step of that process you can test. Your homepage, if someone comes into your homepage, something that we actually tested at Easter Seals is we put a bright green button on our homepage that said donate, and we assume that obviously it's big, it's green, there's no way you can miss this. But it was pointed out to us that we had a drop-down menu that said ways to give, in which we didn't have a specific donate link. So we tested it. It was an A-B test. So if you came to our site, you had a 50% chance of seeing this link and a 50% of not seeing it. And having that link actually increased donations. So bringing people to the form is a very important part of the whole process. You can't raise $1 million if no one is coming to your donate form.
Can we test how they're coming from it? What are the referral sites that are driving people to the homepage?
If you have the analytics in place, yes. So could be, you're testing Google Ads, or you're testing your social media marketing
emails,
message, your email message. Yeah, any way to get people there is a test. Once you get them to the homepage, it's a test. Once you get them on the donation page itself, again, there's so many different things that you can test. What's your ask string? What are the, do you go higher to lower?
Wait, I'm sorry, did you say ask string?
Yes, sorry.
What's your ask string? Now, on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, we have Jargon Jail. And I think this testing conversation may just be ripe for some pretty stiff sentences in Jargon Jail. But probation does come along easily.
Okay, thank you.
Is it parole or met the probation, parole board? Parole comes along easily.
Okay,
all right,
I'm going to
go ahead.
In trouble for the next couple minutes.
What's our ask string?
So an ask string is the amount that you present to the donor. In increments, is it 20, 30, 50?
Oh,
so you have the options, and then you generally have the open text field that says, what amount do you want to give?
Okay.
So in the jargon, it's the string is the
the recommendations, the suggested giving amounts. At what levels are those? Okay.
Right. So testing what those actual numbers are, the space between, do you jump from 10 to 100? Do you do it in 10 dollar increments? If you go from higher to lower, is it vertical? Is it horizontal?
We're really getting that.
You can do all sorts of
higher to lower, up and down. Vertical or horizontal, really?
And sometimes it makes a difference, and sometimes it doesn't. So that's why you test.
Okay. Yeah.
One of the most common tests with any sort of ask string is actually going ahead and saying, well, is this kind of one of the best ways to actually start looking and seeing if you can increase your average gift size. So actually looking at saying, well, how much am I actually asking somebody to donate? Is my normal donation page actually asking people to just donate 5, 10, 15, and 25? And I know I'm hoping that people listening would say, wow, that's really, really low. Because I certainly hope that you would say that, because I certainly would say that. But, you know, we can certainly look at it. A lot of times people will donate however much you ask them to. They don't necessarily sit there and say, well, how much can I actually afford to give? They use what you present to them as a guide. You know, it's kind of like, how much can I give that should actually be helped? Or how much should I give that will actually help? So obviously kind of changing that ask string, seeing how much you can actually ask, testing what's really going to work for your audience size, and whether or not you can move that needle is definitely one of the best ways to start. I would just caution, because there is one thing that you can run into, is it's always a little bit, when you start looking at asking people for a certain dollar amount, the higher you go, sometimes the fewer actual donations you'll get. So it's always a little bit of a balancing act of saying, well, does it matter if I get 10% fewer gifts at a $25 instead of a $20 level, or is that hurting me net revenue-wise?
Yeah.
You know, it's a balancing act to really look and see how far you can push it, but it's definitely a good test to start looking at, if you're not already.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is their common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds, or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Client that has a database of about 400,000 people, a little over half of them are current donors, within defining that as made a gift in the current or most recent past year. It's like 225,000 or so of the 400,000. And their average gift is $18. So, you know, it could be a pretty well established, and this is a faith-based organization, goes back into the late 1800s. you know, it could be a pretty well-established organization, but still have $50 could be a very large donation for them.
Yes.
So
yeah, definitely.
Still possible. So.
Well, and also one of the things in our session, in particularly, we focus on online testing, so driving up revenue specifically online.
Yeah.
With the other client that you mentioned, $18 seems awfully low, so I would guess that they're more print.
Oh, they are.
They're probably okay.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, in print it's a little bit lower. You know, the average gift size is definitely lower in print. That doesn't mean you can't test that out in print as well. So if you're doing any kind of direct mail program. I'll admit that I'm more digital specialist. I wouldn't pretend that I'm a print mail specialist. But one of the things that you can certainly be doing is on your reply device is actually looking and testing. There are a lot of different types of tests that you can do with how much you ask, whether you base it off of someone's previous highest contribution, whether or not you base it on kind of their last gift, just their period, their last gift, not necessarily their highest gift ever.
And I think also where you position that if you're using last gift, I understand there's lots of possibilities, but if you're using one of their exact gifts, where you position that in your ask string? Does it come in the middle? Is it first or last? Right?
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
And then, of course, there are all sorts of different treatments about whether or not you highlight the one that's slightly higher than what they want.
Oh,
you know,
my.
I mean, that sort
okay.
of stuff.
all right.
There's also, you know, I'll call this out. We call it equivalencies, but it's the idea of, have you ever seen something where you say, oh, well, for $5, we can actually give a child a vaccination?
Sure.
You know, that sort of thing.
Impact.
Exactly.
An impact ask.
Exactly. Yeah. You can certainly always test those out. In fact, actually, one of my clients just recently did some surveying and looked at it and said, well, actually, the equivalencies that we've been using for certain dollar handles really just don't seem to be the ones that people care the most about. So maybe even just changing what that equivalency is may actually get more people to actually give at that level, give that gift. And that's something that actually they just started going ahead and testing. But
okay.
Something to think about.
Cam, let's bring you back. What else in the lame hypothetical that I created, what else can we be testing? What else interested you in what I created and what I set up?
Well, on the donation form itself, copy. How much copy, what kind of copy, what's your tone in the copy, whether or not you use images, what kind of images. There's really so many different possibilities. You just need to figure out what it is that I would test one thing at a time, because if you try change everything, you're never going to get a
solution. Then you don't know the answer. Yeah,
right. So there are so many possibilities. You've really got to figure out what can you focus on, what is your strength. If you don't have a lot of photography, testing images doesn't make a lot of sense. But maybe testing the copy does.
Okay. Let's see. How are people always randomly assigned, Cam, to test alternatives?
In the test that we've run, we tend to run A/B tests. So yes, we do.
Always random.
Okay. We have done some testing that's a little bit more broken out by highest previous contribution. But those are very specialized, specific tests. If you want something a little bit broader, like is this copy working for our audience in general? Does a $500 ask, is that too much for our clientele? Then, yes, I think a general, more random is the way to go.
Okay. Matt, I see you shaking your head a lot. Anything you wanted to add there?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I would say is if you were going to set aside a specific control group of people that are kind of representative, but even that, you would probably more or less kind of randomly select. You wouldn't go through and one by one kind of pick out names. You just kind of originally, when you're setting that group, try to get a generally representative population of your audience, and then maybe you just kind of hold them off separate.
Okay.
If you know you have two very distinct groups, like you know that you have the 70-plus people who are very passionate, but they like a certain message, and you're trying to bring in a younger crowd that you think will listen to a different message, then, yeah, you would want to be more specific in who you choose.
Okay. Let's see. Can we take our hypothetical a little further? Anything, other things that we can... We can be testing, or can we add another layer onto our $500,000 campaign hypothetical to make it more interesting from a... Go ahead. I mean, have fun.
Well,
make it more interesting from a testing perspective.
One of the things that you could do is look at doing... It, you know, assume this goes a little bit beyond, maybe not everybody has the opportunity to do this, but you could also look at saying, well, we obviously have, you know, $500,000 for a $2.5 million organization is a pretty sizable chunk of their budget. So you might actually want to invest a little bit in kind of focus group testing. Look at actually what your message is going to be up front. So you might actually look at saying something like, well, are we going to go with a message? You know, let's say this is an international relief organization.
Sure.
Are you going to say, hey, well, I want to specifically raise disaster preparedness funds? Or do I want to pick a specific emergency that actually I'm responding to? You know, if we look back at the Philippines just recently, Haiyan, do we need to maybe raise revenue specifically to offset that? You know, or do we have something more generic that we really just kind of want to talk to? Or maybe we even have another area. The three-year anniversary of the Syria conflict is obviously coming up, if not on us right now. You know, I mean, you got all these different types of things that you might want to look at testing and saying, well, let's put out a little bit, let's put some feelers out there, see if we can figure out which approach, which conflict, which message really seems to resonate and is most likely to get us to the end goal that we need. Even if we are trying to raise unrestricted, you know, and we have some concerns about whether or not it's going to become restricted, you know, if we at least know what type of message really seems to resonate, then we can look at that and say, well, what can we learn from this? How can we pick up some of these different types of pieces and try and actually put that into a really strong, unrestricted campaign?
Okay. And were you going to add something, Cam? Or no?
I was going to go off in a different direction.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Okay.
Because I'm assuming that you're doing email with this campaign. It's not just a website that stands alone.
Let's include that, of course.
Because you want to make sure that you drive people there. Timing, when do you send your emails? Do you send them in the morning? Do you send two in 1 week? It's very interesting. We used to think that our clientele had like a 3-day window where they would take that long to open it. And now we're finding that actually within 24 hours, if they don't act, they're not going to do anything. So that we have to, you know, change our approach. And we're constantly testing that to make sure that we're doing the best that we can, not only to give our clientele what they want, but also to give us the best benefit.
Even email, I've had guests who talk about testing subjects. Subject lines,
That's huge, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, see, it's so pedestrian and obvious that I'm the only one at the table who would say it. But it's good.
It's a good thing to point out because the subject lines are an incredibly important part of the email, and people do tend to forget them. They write them first and don't go back and look at them. They just assume once it's done, but that's not at all the case.
And email, looking a little more broadly, is still quite impactful and effective. For nonprofit fundraising, right? We're not.
Yes. Oh, we're not.
We haven't given up on email.
No,
right?
No, definitely not.
No, not even close.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Making it clear in case anyone had a contrary opinion.
I know this hypothetical is the raising $500,000 in an unspecified amount of time.
Yep.
But consider urgency and changing that urgency.
That could go to your campaign message that Matt was talking about, too. Continue, please.
So our name is Easter Seals. Obviously, that has a connotation to a certain holiday that's coming up. Maybe by the time this podcast...
may have passed. actually, may have. But yeah. It's within many weeks, either before or after.
Okay. So we tended to just always have a spring campaign that was our Easter drive to tie into our name. And then 1 year we decided that we were going to stop that and we wanted to more closely align it with our offline campaign, which was a spring drive. And it happened to our due date for, you know, all the money to come in was at the end of the month. It had absolutely nothing to do with Easter. And it did terribly online because people were so used to our name and just seeing that holiday triggered with our name got them to donate. So... timing, I mean, obviously ours is a special case, but timing can be very important.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would even say that, you know, I've had another client that they're not as completely tied. You know, I mean, obviously Easter Seals is a little bit more. But I've had other clients that they have their donor base is used to one specific time. I've had one of my clients actually had a really, really big time of year at Thanksgiving, even bigger than, you know, December 31st, which I know is going to, that shocks just about everybody
wow.
in the nonprofit.
Yeah.
But It's just when you have individuals who have been trained, when you have a supporter base that really connects you with a specific time of year, a specific event, you know, don't try to just abandon it. You know, keep that.
Work with it.
Exactly.
I mean, where are the...
Use your strength.
Lots of guests have talked about, you know, where are your constituents? Go to where they are, not where you want them to be. But when are they about, too?
Exactly.
I mean, what time? Now, was that a Save the Turkeys charity at all? Were they?
It was a rescue mission, actually.
Oh, okay.
So they basically had a big food. They had basically a big feast, a big kind of serve the homeless. You know, make sure that everybody has a good Thanksgiving, that type of thing.
Oh,
so.
Okay. All right. So see that connection. What are some things that in our last couple of minutes we can leave listeners with that they can implement immediately? I think it says optimization tests. Optimization tests that you can implement right away. Without saying, depends on your. What we can be general enough, but let's leave people with something they can think about right away. What would you suggest?
Well, this is almost a kind of a final thought, but one thing that I will point out, and we stress really heavily in the session, is number one rule of testing is always, always, always test it. Because we have seen, just as Cam had mentioned, you know, I mean, there are different things that will work for one organization but won't work for another because the two different organizations have an audience that is slightly different that has different expectations. You know, the same thing like what we were talking about. You know, if I were to have any of my clients go out really strong for an Easter push, it's probably not going to work that well. But at the same time, Cam could probably pull up 1,000 different examples, data that shows, no, this really works because it works for one organization but not necessarily another.
Okay. Cam, final thoughts?
My answer is going to be, you're going to hate it, but it depends.
Okay.
It's
okay.
If you know what you want to test, like you have that inkling, like I think this is going to do well or I think we're not getting it because that's what you need to test. It's your gut and then you just go from there. If you see an email or a website that you like, figure out why you like it and test that.
A great thing to test, too, is also just kind of those, because you reminded me, but you know how every one of us can probably come up with an example of a CEO or the big guy who came up to us with, oh, we should really do this. Oh,
I saw this thing, and
we
should do it.
A test can be a great way to say, well, yes, we did it, but we didn't really waste a whole lot of time and money on that idea. And by the way, it didn't work.
Yes.
Okay, that's very good. That could work with board member ideas, too.
Yes, yes.
It doesn't have to be the executive director.
Very often.
Excellent. Thanks very much. All right. Matt Bergdoff is Senior Account Executive at Donor Digital, and Cam Robbins, Interactive Marketing Manager for Easter Seals. And Cam and Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Real pleasure. This is Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio coverage of NTC, Nonprofit Technology Conference 2014. Thanks very much for being with us.
My thanks to everybody at N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network. We've got live listeners, of course. Let's start abroad. Tokyo and Kawasaki, Japan. Konnichiwa. Beijing. Ni hao. And Seoul and Yeonjin, South Korea. Annyeonghaseyo. New York, New York. New Bern, North Carolina. Somerville, New Jersey. Live listener love to each of you and all our live listener loves. Never forget the podcast, listeners. Podcast pleasantries to everybody listening, wherever the heck you're listening, to the podcast. Generosity Series. They host multi-charity 5K runs and walks, and they are sponsors of Nonprofit Radio. You probably, may be difficult for you to generate enough runners to host your own event. So, makes sense to team up with other nonprofits, and that's what Generosity Series does. Their runs are fun. I emceed one in last November in Brooklyn. They have also a charity support team that helps you with your fundraising. You talk to these people on the phone. You don't have to live chat with them by text. You talk to them. And naturally, you have the dashboard and online tools as well. But there is this charity support team that you can talk to. I like that. Multi-charity means that you can have an event with a small number of runners, because when you put your charity together with all the others in the event, you'll have hundreds of runners. And Generosity Series takes care of all the back-end stuff. You can talk to the COO, Dave Lynn, about becoming one of their charity partners. They have events coming up in New Jersey, Miami, New York City, and Philadelphia. Please tell Dave you're from Nonprofit Radio. He's at 718-506-9777 or generosityseries.com. Last week's show was the ALS CEO, Barbara Newhouse. It was a Google Plus hangout on air. We did it at the Chronicle of Philanthropy studio in Washington. The show was devoted to the Ice Bucket Challenge. The video from the hangout is at TonyMartinetti.com. And that's Tony's Take Two for Friday, 10th of October, 40th show of 2014. Maria Semple is back. She's our monthly prospect research contributor and the prospect finder. She's a trainer and speaker on prospect research. Her website is theprospectfinder.com. Her book is Panning for Gold, Find Your Best Donor Prospects Now. She's our doyen of dirt cheap and free. You can follow her on Twitter at Maria Semple. Welcome back, Maria.
Hey there, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you today?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Cool. That's good. We're here to talk about gifts in kind on this fall afternoon.
We are. Yeah. But I first need to just quickly mention to you that apparently I am having a 3-year anniversary with your show this week.
Really? You've been tracking?
Who's been tracking it is LinkedIn.
Oh, really? You saw an anniversary notice on LinkedIn? This is your third year month?
It sent out an anniversary notice to my connections, and I all of a sudden started getting all these congratulatory notes this week. So I thought, isn't that appropriate that here is my week to reconvene with you? So it's been 3 wonderful years.
Whoa, that's really something. If you had asked me, I would have thought it was. I would have said it was more like 2. Holy cow, that's terrific. I get those notices. But I don't always read all of them. Usually I just read the birthday notices. I don't always read all the work anniversary notices. But I also noticed they send them out throughout the month. So they don't only come in the beginning. So maybe I haven't gotten yours yet, your 3-year anniversary. But happy anniversary. I'm glad you've been with me for 3 years.
Thank you for having me for 3 years. It's been wonderful.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. Gifts in kind. Let's make sure everybody understands what a gift in kind is.
Yes, that's right. Let's do that first before I get thrown off into jargon jail first out of the gate here. So, gifts in kind would really be anything other than monetary donations. So typically they would be considered donations of food, clothing, medicines, furnishings, office equipment, building materials, and even sometimes services that are provided by somebody could be considered a gift in kind, as opposed to a gift in cash that they might give to your organization. So if they're providing some sort of a specific service and then not charging you for it, I know that sometimes consultants will do that on a pro bono basis. So that would be considered a gift in kind as well.
I can throw out another example that I've worked on a few times. Gifts of artwork, art collections,
yes,
are also gifts in kind. I worked on a really interesting one once. It was a presidential memorabilia collection. And it included a picture. Oh, it included the one of the Nixon resignation letters, original signed. I think there were 5 or 6 that he signed. And it also had a picture of that famous picture of Jimmy Carter, Menachem Begin, and Anwar Sadat. You know, the 3 of them are shaking hands.
Wow.
This was a deep into 6-figure art collection. But so they can be really interesting. And cars. I've worked on a couple of classic car donations also, which can be quite valuable. I know you mentioned automobiles. I was just thinking of classic automobiles. But they can be kind of fun to work on.
Well, so, it must have been interesting. I've never had the opportunity myself to be working directly with a nonprofit while they've been, fortunate enough to receive something, of that type of value. Mm-hmm. And also, it got me to thinking about, what if I were a small to mid-sized nonprofit and had the millionaire next door living in our community, and maybe people didn't even realize they were housing any type of art collection or one or two even significant pieces in their home. And what do you do? What is the next step that you do if you find out that perhaps somebody's left it to you in their will, or they could be making the gift while they're still alive?
Sure.
And then, it got to be really complicated as I started to research this a little bit to try and figure out, well, what does a nonprofit need to do first in terms of valuing the artwork? So what did you do? I'll tell you what organizations I kind of came up with that are reputable in terms of places you would turn to, but I'm curious to know how it worked out. How did you appraise the artwork?
Yeah, well, let's take a step back and make sure everybody understands that for a gift that's valued over $5,000, and again, like Maria said, we're talking about non-cash gifts, so this is not cash or stock, but something other than that. Over $5,000, the IRS requires what's called a qualified appraisal, and that's a term of art, and the qualified appraisal has certain requirements, and a qualified appraisal has to be done by a qualified appraiser, and that's also a term of art, and there are certain credentials that the IRS requires. The place that I turned for the presidential art collection anyway was the American Association of Appraisers. I'm pretty sure they're based here in New York, and I believe I contacted them first for some recommendations specific to presidential memorabilia.
Was it perhaps the American Society of Appraisers? Because my research shows that they're the oldest organization founded in 1936, and I think they are in the New York area.
Okay, could have been. But I think there's another one, too, which I think is AAA, American Association of Appraisers, or American Appraisal Association. So we could try either one of those. But well, yours is more bona fide because you actually researched it. I'm remembering off the top of my head.
Yeah, I actually I can actually post a list post show onto your Facebook page, but there were actually sort of six top societies or associations, if you will, that my research turned up. One was that one I just mentioned, the American Society of Appraisers, which according to this particular website that lists them says that this one is the oldest. Then there's the Art Dealers Association of America. The Appraisers Association of America.
Well, there's the AAA.
That could have been it.
Okay. Yep. Please go ahead.
The Appraisal Foundation, the International Society of Appraisers, and the Private Art Dealers Association. So I thought that was all interesting. Then I got to wondering if you can actually turn to any of the major houses that actually, the auction houses, like those that you might be seeing featured on something like Antiques Roadshow. But I didn't know if that was if people turned to those types of auction houses to help, evaluate the worth of an item. Certainly an auction house, I suppose, would get involved once they actually want to, offload that particular item so that they will end up having the cash. I would imagine that would be the case for any nonprofit other than a museum who would want that gift perhaps as part of their display.
Yeah, it could go broader than that. There are ways that nonprofits can use gifts in kind in their mission that are permissible and are not so obvious. Like hospitals can use artwork because they can decorate waiting rooms and hallways and things. One of the classic car donations that I worked on was for a university, and we were anticipating using this classic convertible in their athletic recruiting, because they thought that 17 and 18-year-olds, when they're thinking about what college to go to play sports, might love being driven around in a 57 Chevy. I'm pretty sure that's what it was, convertible. So there are different charitable uses that are not as obvious as, like you said, the museum. There can be other charitable purposes for these types of gifts.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That sounds great, actually. I can really see how an organization might want to step back and think about how it could fit in, as you said, to their overall mission or as an attraction, like in the case of the college or university there with their sports department. Really,
right. and
cool stuff.
And of course, there's also the other examples you gave. You know, services could be gifts in kind. So that's obviously being used up immediately. A point that I want to make too is, it's sort of subsumed in what we're saying, or I'll make it explicit. You have to find the right kind of appraiser. There are, like I mentioned, presidential memorabilia. There are appraisers who specialize in just that. So if you had a fine art photograph that was being donated to you, you need to find someone who specializes in not only fine art photography, but they may even specialize in the particular photographer, the artist, or the era, if it's not a contemporary piece of art. So you have to find, and this goes into the IRS requirements too, you have to find someone who specializes in precisely what it is you're being given. If it's an automobile appraisers. It's just like a medical specialist. You have to find the right kind of person. Maria, let me ask you about trying to find gifts in kind. I mean, they don't only come from wealthy people. I don't want people to be left with that idea. They don't only come from people of wealth. What about ways of finding gifts in kind in your community?
Well, that got me to thinking about not just the individuals in your community who might be capable of doing this, but then I started thinking about all of the corporate programs that are in place, for example, that have gifts in kind as part of their overall corporate social responsibility. So they may have a corporate giving program, a corporate foundation, then they may have a separate set of programming related to in-kind. And then I was wondering, well, how could a nonprofit potentially find who are the corporations in my area? Or, you know, I'm a nonprofit in need of, whatever, women's clothing to help the women in our shelter be closed in the winter months or something like that. You know, where could I find that? I actually found, I'm sure there's multiple websites, but I found a nonprofit website that looked like it would really be helpful for your listeners to know about, and it's Good360. Have you heard about that one?
No, I don't know it. Is it good360.org?
Yeah, good360.org. And so you can go into this if you are a nonprofit and you're in search of product donations, and you can see the companies that are there, and if you're a company that wants to list your product donations, you can list what you have available. Of course, if you're an individual that would just like to donate to this particular good360.org, you can do that as well. They're looking for monetary donations always. So I just thought it was a pretty interesting, almost like a clearinghouse, it looks like to me.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's why you're our doyen of dirt cheap and free. Anything else you found out there about trying to find these types of gifts?
I was thinking about, and this might be more suitable for organizations that are, you know, related to being near the water or maritime or marine environment organizations, but you and I have touched upon yachts in the past and trying to figure out, you know, yacht owners and so forth. But, you know, sometimes there will be people who would like to actually donate their yacht, just like people would want to donate a car as opposed to trying to sell it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Boatinfoworld.com would allow you to search by state or county or zip code for a list of the boat owners near you. So, you know, if we have anybody in the, you know, marine-related industry listening to the call, they might want to check out boatinfoworld.com to get a list of boat owners. And it could be something that they would want to start cultivating relationships with those individuals, getting them involved in cultivation events, et cetera.
You always go the marine way because you have a sailboat.
I know.
Are you donating your
sailboat? I always try and weave that in, don't I?
Yeah, that's okay. Are you donating your sailboat?
No, not anytime soon.
You're not? Okay. Boy, you were quick to answer that, too. Okay. Okay. Where else should we go with this? I'm sorry, was there anything more about finding potential gifts in kind, or have we exhausted that?
Then I start thinking about real estate, and I was wondering, well, how would you find out if you wanted to proactively find if there is real estate that could be potential for donation? And I was thinking, well, I guess if you got involved in developing solid relationships with realtors in your area, or, you know, even the banks that, you know, unfortunately, these last few years we've seen such high foreclosure rates and so forth. There might be some opportunity there if you have conversations with bankers in your community or realtors to find out about some potential properties that could become available, as a donation.
All right. We have to go out for a couple minutes. When we come back, I have a couple of tips about real estate gifts that Maria is talking about, and we'll keep going on gifts in kind. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zubov.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is a common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds, or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
I'm Dana Ostemel, CEO of Deposit a Gift, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
More listeners have joined us from South Korea, Anyo Hasayo, and also Taipei, Taiwan has joined us. Ni hao. Maria Semple. Hey there. What would I say in Jersey? What up?
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing. Yeah, that's a slow. Yeah, I was born in Jersey and I was raised there, so I don't like that that kind of organized crime overtone around New Jersey. But Sopranos obviously hit that home. A couple of things that I wanted to reinforce about real estate that you have brought up. Real estate can be a very, very good gift for nonprofits. It can also be a really lousy gift. You have to do your due diligence around real estate. And basically, it's the same as if you were buying a home or a condo or a co-op. Do the same due diligence before you put that charity name in the chain of title. So you want to do an environmental assessment, phase one. If that raises any issues, then you have to go to a phase two assessment. If the land has buildings on it or a home or whatever, you want to make sure that the building is all in code. So there's that kind of an inspection, a building inspection. Title search to make sure that there isn't some defect in the title. Basically, all the things you would do, as I said, that you if you were buying the place yourself, whether it's got buildings on it or not, before you took ownership of a piece of property, you want to make sure that it's clean in all those ways, environmentally, title, code, and building inspection wise. And if you do all that, then you can end up with a really valuable gift of real estate.
So you bring up an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that chain of title that you just mentioned there. So if I'm in understanding you correctly, does that mean if somebody were to approach an organization, let's say while they're alive, and they say, you know, I've got this undeveloped piece of land we want to leave to, I would like to donate to your nonprofit organization. And if you decide to say, hey, wow, great, and take that piece of land and then immediately sell it, and let's say it's sold within, you know, 3 months' time, and if you didn't go through maybe something in the environmental assessment, and then somebody down the line says, wow, I can't believe XYZ nonprofit ever owned this piece of land. It happens to have had, you know, contamination on it or whatever. So you're saying it could end up coming to bite you from almost like a PR perspective if your name is somehow attached to it?
This is like a law school exam. There's a bunch of things in that hypothetical you just gave me. Yeah, PR, yes, but I think even potentially worse than that, although PR can be pretty bad, there's a potential for legal liability. If it's an environmental mess, then all the owners in the past, and I'm not an environmental lawyer, but I know a little bit, very little about it, all the owners in the past are potentially liable for not having cleaned it up or possibly for having contributed to the mess. So, and that applies to individuals too. So yeah, this is why we do environmental assessments. You can get in some really sticky legal trouble if there turns out later on, a couple of owners later or something, to be an environmental problem, and you know, you didn't know about it, you didn't insure against it, things like that. Go ahead.
I was just wondering, what about in the case of somebody who is willed a piece of land or a property that had some sort of an environmental issue from years ago? Let's you know, think about somebody who maybe owned a family-run gas station for a number of years or something like that, or an oil-related business, oil tanks or something, and then the spouse dies, the person continues to own, the remaining spouse continues to own the property, has no heirs, and decides to leave it at her will to a nonprofit. So then I'm wondering what the impact is. I mean, in this case, can a nonprofit just say, no, we don't want it, no thank you?
Yeah. Again, sounds like a law school hypothetical. And by the way, I do recognize you turning the tables on me, asking me questions, and I don't appreciate it. So you may not reach year four with me. The amount of time that you have to renounce a gift, I'm pretty sure that's what it's called, in a will varies from state to state. It's typically 90 days, or you know, maybe a little longer. For any beneficiary of a gift by will to turn it down. You don't have to accept something that's in a will. So if in your hypothetical, the nonprofit would want to do its due diligence around that real estate before it accepted the gift, and within the time period that it can still turn it down if it doesn't want it. The other thing that came out of your earlier one was you said the charity sells the real estate. That's a whole other issue. If it's sold within 3 years of the time of the date of the donation, then that has implications for the donor's charitable deduction. The donor's charitable deduction gets reduced because if the charity unloads, I'm using an unkind word, but I'm using a loaded word, but gets rid of that gift within 3 years of the date of donation, then it's presumed that the donation was not part of their charitable mission, not within their charitable mission, and therefore the IRS goes back to the donor who claimed the donation and the deduction associated with it possibly years earlier and reduces it from a fair market value to a cost basis deduction. And that could be a huge difference between what it cost the donor to get something and what the market value of it was when they made the gift. So big implications if a charity does not use a gift, if does not use a gift for at least 3 years. We got to go out in about a minute, Maria, so I kind of took over your segment, but you were asking me questions, so it's your fault.
You've given us so much food for thought, really, and I think, you know, the bottom line is you really have to be able to, you know, seek out the right appraisers, seek the advice of financial and law professionals when you're going to be getting any sort of a significant gift, of an in-kind gift, any non-cash related gift. You really do need to do your homework and know what to look for here. It's good stuff.
There are a couple of IRS publications that will help you. Publication 526, which is called Charitable Contributions, and also Publication 561, which is about gifts in kind and those qualified appraisals and qualified appraisers I was talking about. Okay, Maria, we got to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Maria Semple, our doyen of dirt cheap. You'll find her at theprospectfinder.com, and on Twitter, she's at Maria Semple. Next week, UX, user experience secrets revealed, and better tech RFPs, those requests for proposals. Those were both recorded at NTC 2014, the Nonprofit Technology Conference, last May. If you missed any part of today's show, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. Generosity Series sponsors Nonprofit Radio, GenerositySeries.com or 718-506-9777. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Liebowitz is our line producer. The show's social media is by Julia Campbell of J. Campbell Social Marketing. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. Our music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Liebowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at monty@montytaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at montytaylor.com.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%, fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.